And up next, we'll take your questions with Paul Smith and also your ESP experiences next. Any dangerous signs here, Paul, things that we should be cautious about with either remote viewing or ESP use?
The thing to be cautious about is taking yourself too seriously. Well, there's a couple of things. One is that you never know for sure you're on until you get confirmation, but I've seen people get some kind of impression they think came from the remote viewing process when it probably was some kind of mental noise, and they've run with that, and then they are embarrassed afterwards, or they actually make a bad decision or whatever. That's dangerous. It's also possible to get too caught up in it to the point where it kind of dominates your life, and you ignore other things that are more important, or not, I won't say more important, but equally important, and that's a problem. It's also, caution is in order to not overstate what your abilities are to yourself. In other words, you get started, there are lots of folks who maybe have had one short remote viewing course, and all of a sudden they think they're experts, and they go out and they try all kinds of things, and they end up doing two things. First of all, they discredit themselves, and second of all, they discredit remote viewing. Because oftentimes people who are not remote viewers, they think that one size fits all, that everybody who's a remote viewer is equivalent to everybody else who's a remote viewer. And so if one person makes a claim that can't be supported and then they go out and fall on their face, then the public looks at that and says, oh, none of those remote viewers are any good.
that's true.
Problematic for the field.
That's true. To the phones we go. Let's go to Jim in Brighton, Colorado. You're up with us on the wild card line. Hi, Jim.
Hi, George. Hi, you big Paul. What's going on?
Well, there you are. How are you doing?
I missed your call, man. I'm sorry. Hey, George, I'll tell you where the power is at. This gentleman has a course out in dowsing. I've been dowsing for 40 years, and his course is excellent. I loaned my course that I bought from him to a friend, and guess what?
He learned
that
too.
That little turkey got five numbers on the lottery and about $18,000 plus bucks.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Just so, about paid for the course.
Oh, and he didn't even buy it. I bought the thing and lent him my course before I really had a chance. But, Paul, I sent you his numbers and stuff. So, George, the power's in dowsing.
Yeah, I believe that.
Really, I appreciate that, Jim. And
thanks,
George,
Jim.
You have to know I did not put him up to that. I did not know he was going to call.
I know that. You don't do that. Do you use this for lotteries for yourself?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm trying to pick three. Of course, part of that is just an experiment so that I can pass on to other folks what I learned from the process. But I have to say I've not won it yet.
I've got a friend in St. Louis, Paul, who picks the Illinois pick three, and this guy is absolutely incredible. He has won $800, $25,000, $14,000. I mean, like twice a month. It's absolutely incredible.
Is he doing that with dowsing, or is he doing that with
He's just doing it mentally.
Yeah, there are some folks who just do that, and nobody knows how they do it.
Truly remarkable.
Yeah, and that's impressive. You know, you need to make really good friends with him, and when he goes to bet on something, you know, risk a little money.
Next up, let's go to Dan in Joplin on the Coast to Coast. Hey, Dan, go ahead.
Hey, buddy. It's good to talk to you again. This is Dan, the blind man of the angels of Joplin. How you doing, buddy?
Good, good.
Hey, Paul, I got something super I want to mention about dowsing here. Now, of course, I'm blind, so I'm going to mention about dowsing using just my arm.
Interesting. Yeah, we call it deviceless dowsing.
Okay, well, I'll give you an example of this, and then I have a little special treat here. I promise I won't take very long, George. Okay, here's what I did. For example, I was visiting friends in Texas, and I walked in, and they said, well, what have you been doing? And I said, well, they said, we want to repaint our house here on this room, and we don't know what color we want. And they handed me this thing, you know, those things that have the squares of paint, the different colors of paint on them?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And they said, see which one you can pick. So what I did is I put it down on the table, and I held my arm above it and pointed my fingers down towards it, so I didn't actually touch it. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, this is the one that I always come back to. And they said, That's the exact one that we picked. And I've used that with, for example, I'm a composer and a musician, and I've used it to scan musical equipment. Like, for example, I can walk up to a piece of equipment and scan it before playing it, and I can tell if the circuitry is very good.
That's impressive. And it makes sense, you know, if you're visually impaired, as a lot of folks are.
Right. Now, are you familiar with the term synesthete? Do you know that term?
Oh, yes.
Yes, okay. Well, I am a sightless synesthete. So when I eat things that are very nutritious, I hear high frequencies in my mind.
Okay.
I, for example, can, although I don't have a sweetheart right now, I can play back the sensory, like let's say if she massages my arm, I can play back the patterns of what she does to my body 20 or 30 minutes later.
Huh.
Yeah. So I'm going to send you something special. I will tell you the title of it on the email. It says 7 Gifts for Humanity. That's all I'm going to say, but I have something special, and George, you will receive a copy of this too.
Okay, I'm looking forward to this.
Okay, take care now.
Great. Next up, let's go to Knoxville, Tennessee. Hello, Grace. Go ahead.
Hi. I am very interested in what your caller has had to say tonight, and I'm wondering, can a person who is being remote viewed block that viewing? Is there any way to put up a block? I know the viewers aren't going to stop doing what they're doing, but is there anything on my end I can put up or put out as a screen?
The potentially bad news is that probably not. They played around with some approaches at Fort Meade, although they work more towards telepathy. Like, for example, Joe McMonigal would attempt to focus in his head on a brick wall. Just imagine a brick wall, and that's all he focused on. And presumably people were not able to get information out of him. Of course, the problem there is that if you're so busy focusing on a brick wall, you can't think about anything else anyway. So it could be problematic. But basically, one thing they found is that there doesn't seem to be any effective countermeasures to remote viewing. Now, I'm not going to rule out the possibility with the right kind of research we might find something, but as it stands right now, pretty much it's open season. You know, so.
Because I was told that you could imagine yourself on a beach in Hawaii and really get yourself there mentally, and that might be able to trick them up. Have you heard of that?
Yeah, that might work. I mean, that's kind of like Joe McMonigal's brick wall visualization, right? You just pick a much more pleasant thing. I like the Hawaii approach better myself, I think. But what you do is you put yourself in an environment where there's no information that's accessible to the person that might potentially be trying to get information from you, you know, and I don't see why that wouldn't work to some degree, but again, if that's what you have to focus on, you're really not able to go about your normal activities anyway, right? If you're sitting there thinking about being in Hawaii the whole time.
Good point.
Oh, no. It's just I know when I feel them, you know, and I know when I don't feel them, so it's not an all the time thing.
Oh, well, in that case, yeah, then you can apply whatever countermeasure that you think will work, and then it might. I mean, that seems plausible, sure.
Okay,
Grace, thanks. Next up, let's go to St. Louis, Missouri. Hello, Diane, go ahead.
Hi. I was wondering if it was possible that what I'm doing is dowsing. I have been able, years ago, I remember my aunt saying if you prayed to some saint that you would be able to find something. I can't remember, St. Anthony or somebody like that. And I thought, you know, if St. Anthony can show me or whoever it is that's showing somebody, I should be able to tune into whatever that is. You know, we're all connected to the universe and all that. So back in my 20s, because now I'm almost 50, I went, okay. I would lose things, and I'd say, okay, now the universe knows what this is, so I'm a part of the universe. And I've been able to find things without any kind of instrument. Is that dowsing?
Okay. It might be. Tell me how you find them. Do you visualize where they might be and go there and find out they're exactly where you envisioned them?
No,
or do you just sort of feel where they are and go there?
I kind of feel where they are and go there.
Yeah, that's pretty much deviceless dowsing, where you douse without a rod or a pendulum, and your body itself becomes the instrument. And I count that as dowsing. I've found lots of things that way myself.
I've also wondered. I'm glad to hear. And the other thing, I just wanted to make a quick comment. I saw this Children of the Paranormal, and they had a 10-year-old boy on there who was, psychic, and the mother said she was heartbroken. His kindergarten and first grade years, they kept him in special education because they thought he was psychotic. But that's what I'm going to say. Thank you.
Okay. And that happens, doesn't it, Paul?
It does. They sometimes confuse ESP functioning for some kind of craziness, and people get diagnosed with some kind of mental disease or whatever we're calling it and get locked up or treated for something that they don't really have.
Scranton, Pennsylvania, first-time caller. James, you're up with us. Hey, James.
Hi, George. Pleasure to be on the show tonight.
Sure,
talking to you.
Thank you.
Hi, Paul. How are you doing? It's also a pleasure to talk to you.
We're good.
And I'm not familiar with you, Paul, but I've been listening to Coast to Coast just recently, actually. A friend got me into it a little while ago, but just in the last couple of weeks, I've been listening more and more, and I just so happened to come home tonight and hop in bed and throw it on. And as you were talking about remote viewing and dowsing, and I'm not familiar with any of this stuff, but you were talking about a situation where a man came to an intersection or had a thought or in a remote view, I guess, of a...
Well, it was a dream, a dream ESP, yeah.
Okay, so he had this dream of getting to the intersection, and then, as he said, when it actually happened, he stopped, and as he stopped, the man went by at 60 miles an hour. He could have been killed. Right before I turned the radio on and started listening to the show, I was thinking about a book that I had just finished reading called The Shack. And there's an instance in that book where a man does come to an intersection that he was at before, but he goes through and gets hit by a drunk driver. And I had put about 5 minutes of thought into it before I'd even turned the radio on. And then when I turned it on, you mentioned that and then started talking about remote viewing, and it seemed very, very strange to me, and I wonder if you have any thoughts on that.
You started hearing that Twilight Zone theme behind the scenes, didn't you?
Yeah, a little bit. That was kind of coming in the background.
Well, that's interesting, and it often happens. That's where the intuitive side of it comes in. It's not exactly remote viewing. It's more like a lower-level kind of intuition where something that we're going to experience in the very near future suggests something in our current present time that just kind of comes to mind. It's one of those sorts of things like Rupert Sheldrake studied this, but the people who just, they know the phone rings and they know who's on the other end, right? Mm-hmm. And they pick it up and sure enough, that's who it is. It's one of those sorts of intuitive experiences.
It was, and you know what, it felt like it was just something like that. And I've been, just been listening to a lot of programs on this show, talking about like what's going on with the world and everything, and I've been doing a lot of thinking about that, and it was just that this book has kind of had some impact on me. It's called The Shack, and it's a really good book, and it's all kind of connecting a little bit. And
okay, good.
Yeah,
great.
Thank you, Paul.
Thanks for listening.
Yep.
All right, Los Angeles, we go west of the Rockies. Valerie, it's your turn. Hi.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good morning. Hi.
Hello.
Paul, pleasure to talk with you. George, I have to tell you, I've got to give credit where credit is due. The gentleman who I am currently with, who I consider the love of my life and basically my soulmate, is the one that has turned me on to your show and been listening to you for about a year now and just love the different topics. He'll call me on the phone. He'll say, put Coast to Coast on, listen to it, you'll like it.
I love it.
Every single time, every subject. But you also wanted people to call about their experiences too. And Paul, I have been experiencing metaphysical phenomenon for my entire life. I'm now 50. I've noticed that my children, that range anywhere from 32 to 10, also experience psychic ability, and I range experiences everywhere from prophetic dreams, I mean extreme detailed prophetic dreams, to I've tried RV, but I've actually succeeded about three times at AP,
astral projection. Mm-hmm. But mainly my forte right now is dream reading and prophetic dreams. A couple of case instances are the most profound one is when I was 26 or 27, my absolute best friend at the time, a male friend, had I had dreamed that we were at a house, kind of like a party, but at this particular house. Wasn't mine, but and I'd never been at his house before, but I knew I was in his house. I'm walking down a hallway, and all of a sudden, I feel somebody holding my right hand. I look over to my right, and it's my friend holding my hand. His name was Ray. Ray's holding my hand. And as we're walking down the hallway, I notice also on the right-hand side of this hallway that there's a door open. First look, you can tell that it's a bathroom door, and as you're walking more towards the doorway itself, and the door goes to, and I push the door open a little bit, I can see a pair of legs that are disrobed face down. And it was such a shock that I woke up and I knew that something was wrong. Now, this man, again, was just such a dear, dear friend of mine, and I knew his phone number by heart. But any time that I've had a prophetic dream, I have noticed that it comes to fruition within a 72-hour period, within 3 days. And that has always been the norm my entire life.
So that happened in this case?
Yes, it did. For 2 days, I could not remember his phone number. And just something inside me kept urging me to call. I needed to call. I needed to get a hold of him. I couldn't get a hold of him. On the third day, my husband at the time had come home and told me that he had committed suicide that day.
Oh, my goodness.
In that same bathroom in his house. That, again, like I said, that is the most profound one. But I have had so many throughout my entire life. But I'm finding that talking with other people, because I've also been Wiccan for almost 30 years now, that anybody that I have come across who has had prophetic dreams has always happened within a 72-hour period.
Well, that might be the case, although I don't know that there's anything magic about that time frame.
No, I think it's just the urgency of the meaning or of the warning. But you were talking also about the paradoxical time that I really do believe that the reason why I could not remember is so that there was no way that I could stop the event from happening. Because
I see. So you didn't mess up with the timeline, huh?
Exactly, because it was something that would happen to him. Mm-hmm. But when you're having the dream about yourself, like you would be with the potential car accident, because it's happening to yourself, there's a little bit of leeway to go with it. So
it's an interesting thought. It's kind of an agency thing, isn't it? That somehow the universe, you're suggesting here that somehow the universe steps in to keep you from taking other people's choices away from them, but allows you to make your own choices yourself. Is that kind of what you're thinking?
Okay, stay with us. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, Glynis McCants joins us, the numbers lady, numerology. Should be a fascinating, fun show right here on Coast to Coast AM. Paul, when is your next remote viewing conference?
That is going to be the third weekend in June.
Where?
It'll be in Las Vegas. We're negotiating with the Green Valley Resort. It's the Remote Viewing Association's 10th anniversary, and so we're trying to really do it up big. And it's a great setting, great venue, and we're working on a really nice program to make it suitable for a celebration.
Let me know if I'm in Los Angeles, not St. Louis, around that weekend. I might just pop over there because it's pretty close.
That would be exciting, and we would treat you nicely.
You always do, Paul. You always do. Let's go to the phones again. Tito in Florida, welcome to Coast. Hello, Tito.
How are you doing today, George?
Good.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm doing it. I'm just trying to make sense of a reoccurring dream that I have. I mean, I have it at least twice a week, and I don't know if it's part of remote viewing or dowsing or what it may be, but I was hoping you could at least give me some insight on that.
One of us will try.
About twice a week, I get this dream where I'm on a two-lane highway, right?
Okay.
But I can see objects like the vehicles in front of me and the vehicles behind me, but I can't see the people that are sitting next to me. And for some reason, in my dream, I go to pass a vehicle, although I know I shouldn't do it, but I go to pass a vehicle, and I run head-on into a vehicle, a truck, a big old truck. But the odd part is that I can see that happening. I'm in the vehicle, and the next thing I see, I'm in another vehicle watching it happen at the same time. And I really don't know why I'm having that dream, and I have it all the time.
How long has this been going on?
I would say about 6 months.
6 months, huh? Okay, there's a couple things. There's the normal everyday explanation, which is that there's something going on in your life that's affecting you subconsciously, or that this is symbolic of. Okay, and there's always that possibility.
Okay.
There's also, of course, the possibility that it's some kind of precognitive ESP kind of based thing, and it's warning you about something. Do you recognize where you are that this happens? Is it in a stretch of the road that you're familiar with, or any kind of?
No, it happens on a stretch of road that I don't recognize. It has always been on a two-lane road.
Yeah.
And it's so dark, all you can see is the vehicles. And I know I have a carload of people, but I can't see their faces.
Yeah. Well, that's a tough one to answer, particularly since there's no identifying details involved here. Here's one thing that you could, because there's a chance it could be precognitive, that you're being warned by your subconscious and in your own inner ESP-related faculties, right? It could be that it's a warning, in which case, if you ever find yourself in that setting or something that's very much like it, that there's people in the car, you're on a dark road, it's two-lane, you're tempted to pass, and yet you don't feel right about it, then just like the guy who hesitated before he went through the intersection, don't pass, right? I mean, it seems obvious to say that, but interestingly, there are many cases where people have had these intuitions, these precognitive dreams or whatever, and they haven't listened to them, and they have gotten in trouble. So treat it seriously.
Okay.
Now you may want, it's possible you may want to talk to a counselor or something about it who might specialize in dream interpretation and see if they can help you sort out if it is just a standard kind of life dream that you might be having.
Yeah, because I find it odd that I'm in the vehicle while it's happening, and at the same time I'm seeing it from another vehicle.
Well, yeah, that's not so unusual because, of course, our consciousness can skip around. It can change perspectives and things, even though our bodies may not. I mean, that's one of the things that happens in remote viewing, is that you can change your perspective around about a target and approach it from different angles, which is very useful. It's an extremely useful skill. And, of course, even in non-remote viewing scenarios, when we're imagining something or thinking about something, we often can move our perspective, imagine what it might look like from a different direction, for example. So that in itself isn't too exceptional, except for the fact that, of course, your mind is going to want to say, well, you know, in this dream, you've had this collision. You obviously can't experience it from, or you may not be able to perceive what's going on at that point. So you switch perspectives to help you give you an overview as well of what's going on. Kind of like in a TV show, they might cut to a different camera to kind of show, you know, the larger picture or whatever.
Okay. Well, thank you, guys.
Okay, Tito.
Good luck.
Lisa, Los Angeles, it's your turn. Hey, Lisa.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
You guys sound great tonight.
No, thank you.
I have two questions. Have you ever heard of neighbors moving in next door to you and totally destroying your prosperity?
That's happened, yes.
So bad luck folks in a way, but their bad luck rubs off on you, sort of.
Well, we had a dispute, and then I've been able to read people's minds for like a while. I mean, not really read them, but they'll send messages. Like when I'm walking away, someone will say, oh, that so-and-so, and I'll listen, and I'll go, oh, my God. Or I'll think about someone, and then I'll get a message. But then I got messages from them after they moved in, and they're Asian. And I found out that Asian people are very powerful in being able to have that ESP power. So since they moved in, they've kind of destroyed my prosperity, and when they're gone out of their house, my prosperity comes back, so I'm moving. But have you ever heard of that?
Well, first of all, you know, I don't know about Asians, of course, if they do have some propensity for this, it's probably because they're more open to it. Their mm-hmm. culture allows them to accept it better than ours sometimes does. As far as people, you know, kind of casting a black cloud on your life, I mean, that happens all the time, right? And sometimes usually, it's hard to say because it's a very hard thing to quantify, but certainly oftentimes it's just because of their emotions or the way interact with you or the overt kind of behaviors and things. That in itself is enough oftentimes to cause someone to be in a depressed sort of state, right, whether that's financially or whatever. But I there are people who are kind of, I hate to use this word, and take it figuratively, there are people who are kind of soul suckers, you know, that just kind of absorb energy and kind of cast a blanket of, you know, dispiritedness around them, which may indeed have a sort of a non-local base, if you will, you know, a sort of, I don't know, ESP or a psychic sort of a base to it. And then you just have to deal with it. Now, of course, the thing is that no one, and this applies both in a normal sense and also in a psychic sense, no one can cause you to be depressed or in despair or lose your prosperity, as you say, unless you allow them in some way.
What if it's because like a curse, Paul?
I'm sorry?
What if it's like a curse?
Well, I of course, now this is my own belief here. We are all autonomous agents. We all have our own powers, we have our own abilities, we have our own sense of purpose, our own sense of humanness, and we are powerful agents in our own rights. And I don't think that someone else can impose on you if you are aware that they're trying to do that and if you choose not to allow that to happen. But a lot of times they'll do it and people just don't know what to do. They don't know how to think. They don't know how to focus their attitude. They don't know how to be positive and manifest positively in their lives. And or they may not even be where it's happening. They just get more and more depressed or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But if you choose to be positive and you insist on yourself being positive, that's a very strong defense and a very strong counter to that kind of thing.
Let's go take a few more calls here. Mike in Ithaca, New York, you're up with us. Hey, Mike, go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Paul. I want to say some things to shed light on telepathy, two things. One between humans and the other between humans and their pets. And as far as humans go, I just want to say when I was a college student once, I made an error, and I went to the wrong building because they were all identical-looking buildings in the dorm block, and I went in the wrong building. And I went to the room where I thought I was going to find the friend I was going to find. There was a very beautiful girl standing there with her door opened, and she's like standing in her room kind of wondering what to do next with her time.
It sounds like it was a good choice, doesn't it?
And I had this thought that came to my mind, wouldn't it be fun to go to the kitchen with her and gather up all the glasses and fill them with pitchers with water at just the right depth and then get four spoons and with four hands play music mm-hmm. on these rows of glasses. And we immediately started doing that instantly. So, you know, telepathy occurs. Mm-hmm. That opened my mind up a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing, there's something I've talked before when I've called in on open lines, but I knew less about it then than I do now because of something I learned subsequently. But I've called in before to talk about a pet rat that I had named Gretchen who seemed to understand everything that people said to her somehow. By the time she got fairly old, people would give her complicated commands, and she enjoyed showing off and carrying them out. And I often wondered, was this telepathy on the rat's part? Because, you know, Rupert Sheldrake talks about a parrot that can do that. And the parrot knows when his keeper is going to the Rolodex who she's going to look up to call. And suffice it to say, I now know that it was language comprehension in the case of the rat and not telepathy. And the reason why is, one of the things that I like to do is to call the rat over and say, come for food or come for a tickle. If you just called her, she'd accept either. But if you called her for a purpose, she'd only accept that. She she'd refuse food if she was coming for a tickle. And the way I know this wasn't telepathy but language comprehension is the first time I called her for come for a tickle, she came and lay on her back and presented her belly for tickling. And there's a scientist, Robert Provine from Maryland, who studies a lot about homologs to human emotions in animals. And it turns out rats have their equivalent to our laughter, just as dogs do. But in rats, you need an ultrasound machine to hear it. But, of course, well, they love to be tickled on their belly, basically. But
I'll keep that in mind if I ever encounter a rat. But that's good, and it's good that you have a scientific approach to that. Although I have to say, Ingo Swann tells this story. He used to have a chinchilla in his apartment that he really liked. It was his pet chinchilla, and he swears that anytime the chinchilla would be all around, right there on his lap, playing around, whatever, and the instant he thought about putting the chinchilla back in its cage, the chinchilla would disappear, and he'd have to hunt for it. And he wouldn't make a move. He wouldn't say anything. It's just all he'd have to do is think about it, and the chinchilla would disappear. I was there. I didn't see it happen. I don't know, but it was a good story, and Ingo tends to be pretty accurate in his observations. So that, maybe there was some telepathy with animals.
Well, know? When he said it was a rat coming for a tickle, I thought he said pickle.
Oh, well, that could be too, right?
Next up, let's go to Anonymous in Santa Rosa, California. Hey, Anonymous.
Hi. Good evening, Georgia. Thank you for the forum.
Sure
very
thing.
Much.
And, absolutely.
Paul, I don't know where to begin. I would like to disagree, I guess, right off the bat with a caller before last, the lady who had the neighbors. I launched a form of attack on someone at one point. I've been driving my wife nuts now for some time with limited proof for the things that I've been hearing, and which picked up in the last couple of years in intensity and frequency. And I have been, had some of the stuff I've been able to prove as happening. It's all generally in more or less real time, kind of, but certainly non-local. Things that I pick up on, and I had an experience and kind of a question in there somewhere also.
Okay.
An experience being that I had an employer who I was working for, and one time when things were good, he was a fellow that was very enlightened and meditated daily, and was a person who was, I would call it, a very conscious person. And,
okay.
Taught me a good deal about awareness and tried to teach me about quieting the mind and stuff. I'm not sure because most of what I pick up is, and this is the question, but I'll continue on, which is I'm picking up too much of only when it seems to be bad things, talking about myself, or I'm picking up things that people think or are saying that are outside of my area. None of it seems to be good. As the work relationships happened, as it went, this one started to fall apart. And when it happened, I thought I felt him trying to see me, trying to remote view in on me. And one night when I was feeling very, I allowed myself to feel through this relationship as it continued to degrade. I allowed myself to feel kind of very victimized and hurt and justified in my anger, and I launched kind of in a venomous sort of attack at the person who was otherwise just a model of of fitness and health, and who I didn't see afterwards. I think it was probably on a weekend, but then they didn't come to work, and then when they did, they were. They were sick. They got sick, and then they also had. I focused in on something that they really enjoyed doing, jogging, and his knees swole up, and he was unable to run.
Mm-hmm.
And sure. At some point, I realized when I connected that it was happening. I tried to go back there and fix it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if it did or if it just wore off or whatnot. But why am I? Why don't I hear the good things or?
And you don't sound like you're trying to hurt them on purpose.
I was at the time.
Well, you were.
I was very angry. I was very angry and hurt and feeling justified when I lashed out in anger.
A minute or so to go, Paul.
Yeah, as far as negative things, we're wired for negativity because it's, you know, just by natural selection or whatever, we're wired to proceed to be interested in negative things far more than we are interested in positive things, because that's a survival thing, to be aware of the negative things and avoid them, right? Which is why the news is usually bad when you watch the news, is because that's stuff people listen to. They don't listen to the positive stuff. And that may be part of what you're picking up, is you're filtering out the good stuff just because our innate normal experience is to pay attention to the bad stuff, because that's the stuff that could reach out and bite us. So we're running short on time, I guess. That's probably enough of an answer for now. But
We shall do that. All right, Paul, one more time. Get your websites out, sir.
Okay. First is learndowsing.com. Those of you who are interested in dowsing, go to that site. There's a lot of information there, and you'll find our 2-DVD dowsing set that will help you actually learn the skills necessary. My publisher said I should use my Jedi mind tricks to get people to go there. So go to the site and find out about dowsing. It's quite interesting, and the course can be helpful. The other website is rviewer.com. That's my training site. The word viewer with an R in front of it, and .com. And finally, you ask about the remote viewing conference. And we're, of course, putting that together, and I hope we can get some guests for you to be interviewed later on.
Yeah, that would be nice. And we can get those from your website, Paul. Paul Smith, our guest tonight on Coast to Coast AM. For Karis Coburn, Dan Galanti, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Lottasour, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, George Knapp, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.